Besides the differences in the method of individualization, there are also differences in the degree of individualization, owing to the stage at which it takes place. For it makes a great deal of difference at what stage of development of the animal individualization occurs. Thus, for example, if a pariah dog were to, page 61, individualize as is presumably possible, it could be only a very low type of individualization. Probably, it would at most be nothing more than a separated fragment of the group soul, with a monad hovering over it, connected perhaps by a line or two of spiritual matter. A case of this kind would correspond to the lunar animal men, those egos who individualized from the earliest stage of the animal kingdom, at which individualization was possible. They commenced their human life without anything which could properly be called a causal body, but with the monad floating above a personality, to which it was linked only by certain threads of nirvanic matter. It was they who, in the first round of the Earth period, filled the forms made by the lords of the moon, thus doing pioneer work for all the kingdoms. A really intelligent and affectionate pet dog or cat, on the other hand, whose owner looks after him properly, and makes friends of him, would certainly, when he individualized, obtain a causal body at least equivalent to that of the first order of moon men. Various intermediate types of domestic animals would produce the basketwork causal body, such as that obtained by the second order moon men. The last named class of egos had not yet fully developed a causal body, but had what might be described as the skeleton of such a vehicly number of interlacing streams of force, which indicated the outline of the ovoid that was yet to come. They had consequently a somewhat curious appearance, almost as though they were enclosed in a kind of basketwork of the higher mental matter. The determining cause of these different causal bodies lies in the stage at which individualization takes place. If the animal, a dog, for example, has been for a long time in contact with man, and is one of a small group of 10 or 20, then on individualizing, a complete causal body is formed. If there are about 100 in the group's sheep-dog stage, a basketwork causal body is formed. If there are several hundreds, the pariah dog stage, the ears form the indication of a causal body made by connecting lines. The amount of work done in the attainment of any given level in evolution is practically always the same, but in some cases more is done in one kingdom and less in another. For the various kingdoms of nature overlap a good deal, so that an animal who reached the summit of intelligence and affection possible in the animal kingdom would skip over the absolutely primitive conditions of humanity, and show himself as a first-class individuality from the beginning of his human career. On the other hand, one who leaves the animal kingdom at a lower level will have to begin correspondingly lower down in the scale of humanity. This is the explanation of a remark once made by a master, when referring to the cruelty and superstition shown by the great mass of humanity. They have individualized too soon, they are not yet worthy of the human form. The three methods of individualization, through intellect, affection, and will, are the normal methods. Occasionally, however, individualization is attained in other ways, which we may call abnormal or, page 62, irregular ways. For example, at the beginning of the moon chain, a certain group of beings were at the point of individualization, and were drawn towards it by their association with some of the perfected inhabitants, whom we call the lords of the moon. An unfortunate twist, however, entered into their development, and they began to take so great a pride in their intellectual advance, that that became the prominent feature in their character. They worked, not so much to gain the approval or affection of their masters, as to show their advantage over their fellow animals, and to excite their envy. This latter motive pushed them on to make the efforts resulting in individualization, and so the causal bodies which were formed showed almost no color but orange. They were allowed to individualize, apparently because if they had continued in the animal kingdom any further, they would have become worse instead of better. This detachment, or shipload, as it is sometimes called, numbered about 2 millions. They individualized by pride, and, though clever enough in their way, possessed but little of any other quality. The members of this orange shipload, from planeta of the moon chain, declined to enter the vehicles provided for them in the earth chain, while the golden-colored egos from Globe B and the rose-colored egos from Globe C accepted the conditions, entered into the vehicles, and fulfilled their destiny. All through their history, these orange egos caused trouble to themselves and to others, owing to their arrogance and unruliness. They have been described as turbulent and aggressive, independent and separative, prone to discontent, and eager for change. Some of the cleverest of them became the notorious Lords of the Dark Face, in Atlantis, and later world-devastating conquerors, caring nothing for the thousands who were slain or starved in the course of gratification of their mad ambition, or later still, unscrupulous millionaires, aptly termed Napoleons, of finance. Another abnormal method of individualizing is through fear. In some cases, animals which have been cruelly treated by man have developed cunning by their strenuous efforts to understand and avoid the cruelty, so that they have broken away from the group soul, and produced an ego possessing only a very low type of intellectuality. A variant of this class is the type of ego in which the cruelty has produced hatred instead of fear. This is the explanation of the fiendishly cruel and bloodthirsty savages, of whom we sometimes hear, of the inquisitors of the Middle Ages, and of child torturers at the present day. Yet another variant is the entity who is individualized by an intense desire for power over others, such as is sometimes shown by the chief bull of a herd. An ego developed in such a way often manifests great, page 63, cruelty, and appears to take pleasure in it, probably because to torture others is a manifestation of his power over them. On the other hand, those who have individualized at a comparatively low level along one of the regular lines by affection, for example, provide us with a type of equally primitive, but joyous and good-natured savages. Such savages are so only in name, for they are kindly, as are many of the tribes in some of the islands of the South Seas. Page 64, Chapter 15 Functions of the Causal Body. The causal body owes its name to the fact that in it reside the causes which manifest themselves as effects in the lower planes. For it is the experience of past lives, stored in the causal body, which are the cause of the general attitude taken up towards life, and the actions undertaken. In Sanskrit, the causal body is known as the Karana Sharira, Karana meaning cause. Briefly, we may say that the causal body has two main functions. 1. To act as a vehicle for the ego. The causal body is the body of manas, the form aspect of the individual, the true man, the thinker. 2. To act as a receptacle or storehouse for the essence of the man's experiences in his various incarnations. The causal body is that into which is woven everything which can endure, and in which are stored the germs of qualities to be carried over to the next incarnation. Hence one sees that the lower manifestation of man, that is, his expression in his mental, astral and physical bodies, depends ultimately upon the growth and development of the real man himself, the one for whom the hour never strikes. As we have seen in Chapter 13, there is no man, no real human being, until a causal body comes into existence. Every individual being must necessarily have a causal body. It is, in fact, the possession of a causal body which constitutes individuality. The immense amount of work done, in the long eons preceding the birth of the causal body, is devoted to developing and building the matter of the physical, astral and lower mental planes, until it becomes a fit habitation for the divine spirit to dwell in as a man. At its inception, the causal body, or form aspect of the true man, is described as a delicate film of subtlest matter, just visible, marking where the individual begins his separate life. That delicate, almost colorless, film of subtlest matter, is the body which will last through the whole of human evolution. On this, as on a thread self, or sutratma, as it is sometimes called, will all the future incarnations be strung. The causal body, as said, is the receptacle of all that is enduring e.t. only that which is noble and harmonious, and in accordance with the law of spirit, for every great and noble thought, every pure and lofty emotion, is carried up, and its essence worked into the substance of the causal body. Hence the, page 65, condition of the causal body is a true register, the only true register, of the growth of man, of the stage of evolution to which he has attained. All the various bodies of man should be regarded as casings or vehicles, enabling the self to function as some definite region of the universe. Just as a man may use a carriage on land, a ship on the sea, a balloon in the air, to travel from one place to another, and yet in all places remain himself, so does the self, the real man, utilize his various bodies, each for its appropriate purposes, yet remains all the time himself no matter in what vehicle he may be functioning at any given moment. Relatively to the man, all these bodies are transient, they are his instruments or servants, they wear out and are renewed, time after time, and adapted to his varying needs, and his ever-growing powers. More specifically, because mind is fundamentally dual in its functioning, so man needs, and is provided with, two mind bodies. As we saw in the mental body serves for the concrete mind, which deals with concrete thoughts, the causal body similarly is the organ, for abstract thinking. In the thinker, residing in the causal body, are all the powers that we class as mind, that is, memory, intuition, will. The thinker gathers up all the experiences of the earth lives, through which he passes, to be transmuted within himself, by his own divine alchemy, into that essence of experience and knowledge which is wisdom. Even in one brief earth life we distinguish between the knowledge we acquire and the wisdom we gradually, often to rarely, distill from that knowledge. Wisdom is the fruitage of a life's experience, the crowning possession of the aged. In a much fuller and richer sense, wisdom is the fruitage of many incarnations, the produce of much experience and knowledge. In the thinker, thus, is the store of experiences, reaped in our past lives, harvested through many rebirths. In the classification of the bodies of man as sheaths, the causal body is known as the discriminating sheath, as in the following table: : principal in Mankosha or sheath, Sanskrit English Buddhyananda Mikosha bliss sheath, higher manas Vijnana Mikosha discriminating sheath, lower manas and Karma Mani Mikosha feeling sheath, Prana Prana Mikosha vitality breath, Stila and Mikosha food sheath. In the word Vijnana Mikosha, the particle vi implies the discriminating, separating, and arranging of things, for that is the peculiar function of this sheath. Into the Vijnana Mikosha, or causal body, experiences from the Manimikosha are reflected as ideal concepts. The Manimikosha collects and elaborates, the Vijnana Mikosha arranges and discriminates. The lower bodies receive and deal with sensations, perceptions, the making and elaborating of ideas, but it is the work of the causal body to arrange these, discriminate between them, and perform the work of abstract reasoning from them, dealing with pure ideas, separated from the concrete presentations. Page 66, in the causal body we thus have the abstract, not the concrete, the pure internal working, no longer confused by the senses, nor in any way interfered with by the outer world. Here there is pure intelligence, clear vision, intelligence unmoved by the senses, intelligence tranquil, strong, serene. In the causal body also lies the creative power of meditation, the energies that grow out of one-pointed contemplation. This is the creative sheath of man, for manas in man corresponds in the cosmos to Mahat, the universal mind, divine ideation, the molding directing force which is the creative power, from which all comes forth. In this sheath of man exist all forms that can come forth, to which objective reality may be given by this creative power. The Secret Doctrine, I, 312, says, Kriyashakti, the mysterious power of thought which enables it to produce external, perceptible, phenomenal results, by its own inherent energy. The ancients held that any idea will manifest itself externally if one's attention be deeply concentrated upon it. Similarly, an intense volition will be followed by the desired results. This, of course, is the secret of all true magic. Intelligence in man is thus, as said, the reflection of Brahma, of the universal mind, the creative energy. The creative faculty of imagination in man, which at present works in subtle matter, will, when man becomes perfect, work in grosser matter as well, because, as said, the imaginative power in man is the reflection of the power that created the universe. Brahma meditated, and all forms came forth, so, in the creative power of mind lies every possibility of form. Hence H.P. Blavatsky sometimes calls manas the deva ego, or the divine as distinguished from the personal self. Higher manas is divine because it has positive thought, which is kriya-shakti, the power of doing things. Manas, mind, is thus by its very nature, activity. All work is really done by thought power. The sculptor's hand does not do the work, but the thought power directing that hand does it. For it is a truism to say that thought precedes action. Whilst there are occasions on which a man act, as we say, without thinking, yet even so his action is the result of previous thought. He has set up a habit of thought along a certain line and acts instinctively in agreement with that line of thought. Higher manas is divine because, as said, it is a positive thinker, using the quality of its own life, which shines from within. That is what is meant by the word divine, from div, to shine. The outgoing energy of Atma, working in the causal body, is the force which dominates and molds everything that is external to it. The outgoing energy of Atma, working in the Manomaya-kosha, on the other hand, is desire, and its characteristics is that it is attracted by external objects and its direction is governed from without. But Atma, working in the causal body, is will, dealing, no longer with choice directed from without, but with choice initiated from within, molded on the internal images by a process of discriminative reflection. Thus the outgoing energy is, in the causal body, guided from within in its direction, whereas in the lower bodies it is attracted from without. This is the essential difference between will and desire. The will, moreover, is essentially a quality of the ego, not of the personality. The chit, or intelligence aspect of man is the first to be evolved. This is the analyzing faculty which perceives multiplicity and differences, then comes Ananda, the wisdom that realizes the unity of things, page 67, and that accomplishes union, thus finding the joy or bliss that is at the heart of life. Lastly, comes the third or highest aspect, Sat, self-existence, the unity that is beyond even union. In the cycle of races, the fifth race is developing the chit, or intelligence aspect, the sixth will develop the ananda, the union or bliss aspect, the kingdom of happiness, the seventh will develop the sat, or self-existence aspect. Page 68, Chapter 16, Composition and Structure. The causal body consists of matter of the first, second and third sub-planes of the mental plane. The student will recollect that an atom of mental matter contains 49 to the fourth, or 5,764,801, approximately, say, 5 millions of bubbles in koilon. In ordinary people the causal body is not yet fully active, and consequently only that matter which belongs to the third subplane is vivified. As the ego during the long course of his evolution, unfolds his latent possibilities, the higher matter is gradually brought into activity, but it is only in the perfected men whom we call adepts, or master, that it is developed to its fullest extent. It is difficult to describe a causal body fully, because the senses belonging to the causal world are altogether different from and higher than those we employ at the physical level. Such memory of the appearance of a causal body, as it is possible for a clairvoyant to bring into his physical brain, represents it as ovoid, that being, in fact, the shape of all the higher bodies, and as surrounding the physical body of the man, extending to a distance of about 18 inches from the surface of the physical body. A human being, who has just individualized from the animal kingdom, has a causal body of minimum size. In the case of primitive man, the causal body resembles a bubble and gives the impression of being empty. It is a mere colorless film, just sufficient, apparently, to hold itself together and make a reincarnating entity, but no more. Although it is filled with higher mental matter, this is not yet brought into activity, and so it remains colorless and transparent. As the man develops, this matter is gradually stirred into alertness by vibrations which reach it from the lower bodies. This comes but slowly, because the activities of man in the earlier stages of his evolution are not of a character to obtain expression in matter so fine as that of the causal body. But, when a man reaches the stage where he is capable either of abstract thought, or of unselfish emotion, the matter of the causal body is aroused into response. The vibrations thus aroused show themselves in the causal body as colors, so that instead of being a mere transparent bubble, it gradually becomes a sphere filled with matter of the most lovely and delicate hues, an object beautiful beyond all conception. The student will be familiar with the meaning of the various colors, from his study of the same phenomenon in the astral and mental bodies. Thus pale rose expresses unselfish affection, yellow indicates high intellectual power, blue betokens devotion, sympathy is expressed by green and luminous lilac blue typifies the higher spirituality. These same colors in the denser bodies are, of course, far less delicate and also less living. Although, in the course of his evolution in the lower worlds, a man often introduces into his vehicles, page 69, qualities which are undesirable, and entirely inappropriate for his life as an ego such, for example, as pride, irritability, sensuality, yet none of these can be expressed in the causal body. Diagram 24 may help to make clear the reason for this important phenomenon. Each section of the astral body acts strongly upon matter of the corresponding mental subplane. Hence, as the coarser vibrations of the astral body are expressed only in the lower subplanes of the astral world, they will affect the mental body only, not the causal body. The causal body, therefore, is affected only by the three higher portions of the astral body, and the vibrations in those portions represent only good qualities. The practical effect of this is that the man can build into his ego, that is, nothing but good qualities. The evil qualities which he develops are from the point of view of the ego, only transitory, and must be thrown aside as the man advances, because he no longer has within him matter which can express them. Three higher levels of astral matter. Diagram 24, the sub-planes of the astral and mental planes are here shown as of diminishing size, in order to illustrate the fact of their increasing fineness as we rise from the lower to the higher levels. Openings between adjacent subplanes of each plane indicate that certain of the vibrations of a given subplane can be transmitted to the subplane immediately above. These openings or gateways become narrower and narrower, indicating that only the finest vibrations can pass onwards to the higher levels. Openings between each subplane of the astral plane and the corresponding subplane of the mental plane indicate that there is also a possibility of an astral vibration being communicated, at a higher octave, to the corresponding mental subplane. The diagram further illustrates that the mental body is more directly affected by the four lower levels of the astral plane, whilst the causal body is affected by only four colored illustrations of causal bodies at various degrees of development. The student is referred to man visible and invisible, by C.W. Leadbeater, as follows: causal body of savage, plate V, page 66; causal body of average man, plate 8, page 91; causal body of developed man, plate 21, page 118, page 70; causal body of Arhat, plate 26, page 138. As already said, the causal body of an undeveloped savage is like a gigantic soap bubble, transparent yet iridescent. It is almost empty in appearance, what little there is within it representing certain qualities which may already have been evolved within the group soul, of which it previously formed a part. The faint indications of these rates of vibrations are observable within the young causal body as dawning gleams of color. It might perhaps have been thought that the causal body of a primitive man would be very small at first, but this is not the case. His causal body is the same size as any other. It does at later stage increase in size, but not until it has first been vivified and filled with active matter. In the case of an average man, there is a distinct increase in the content of the great ovoid film. A certain amount of exceedingly delicate and ethereal color now exists within it, though it is still less than half filled. Something of the higher intellect is visible, and something of the power of devotion and unselfish love. There is also a faint tint of that exceedingly delicate violet which indicates the capacity of love and devotion turned towards the highest ideal, and also a faint hint of the clear green of sympathy and compassion. As soon as the man begins to develop in spirituality, or even higher intellect, a change takes place. The real individual then begins to have a persisting character of his own, apart from that molded in each of his personalities in turn by training, and by surrounding circumstances. This character shows itself in the size, color, luminosity, and definiteness of the causal body, just as that of the personality shows itself in the mental body, except that the higher vehicle is naturally subtler and more beautiful. In the case of the spiritually developed man, an enormous change is noticed. The glorious iridescent film is now completely filled with the most lovely colors, typifying the higher forms of love, devotion and sympathy, aided by an intellect refined and spiritualized, and by aspirations reaching ever towards the divine. Some of these colors have no place in the physical plane spectrum. The inconceivably fine and delicate matter of such a causal body is intensely alive and pulsating with living fire, forming a radiant globe of flashing colors, its high vibrations sending ripples of changing hues over its surface, hues of which Earth knows nothing, brilliant, soft and luminous beyond the power of language to describe. Such a causal body is filled with living fire, drawn from a still higher plane, with which it appears to be connected by a quivering thread of intense light, the Sutratme vividly recalling to mind the stanzas of Dzogchen: "The spark hangs from the flame by the finest thread of Fohat." As the soul grows, and is able to receive more and more from the inexhaustible ocean of divine spirit, which pours down through the thread as a channel, the channel expands, and gives wider passage to the flood, till, on the next subplane, it might be imaged as a water spout connecting earth and sky, and higher still as itself a globe, through which rushes the living spring, until a causal body seems to melt into the inpouring light. As the stanza says, "The thread between the watcher and his shadow becomes more strong and radiant with," page 71, "every change. The morning sunlight has changed into noonday glory. This is thy present wheel," said the flame to the spark. "Thou art myself, my image and my shadow. I have clothed myself in thee, and thou art my vahan to the day be with us, when thou shalt re-become myself and others, thyself and me." It was said about that in the undeveloped man the causal body is at first almost empty, and as the man develops, the ovoid gradually fills up. When it is completely filled, not only will it commence to grow in size, but in addition, streams of force will flow out in various directions. This, is in fact, is one of the grandest characteristics of the developed man: his capacity to serve as a channel for higher force. For his attitude of helpfulness, and readiness, to give, make it possible for the divine strength to descend upon him in a steady stream, and, through him, reach many who are not yet strong enough to receive it directly. Furthermore, from the upper part of the causal body there ascends a crown of brilliant sparks, indicating the activity of spiritual aspiration, and of course adding very greatly to the beauty and dignity of the man's appearance. No matter how the lower man may be occupied on the physical plane, this stream of sparks rises constantly. The reason for this is that once the soul or ego of man is awakened upon his own level, and is beginning to understand something of himself, and his relation to the divine, he looks ever upwards to the source from which he came, quite irrespective of any activities which he may be inspiring on lower planes. It must be remembered that even the noblest personality is but a very small and partial expression of the real higher self, so that as soon as the higher self begins to look round him, he finds almost unlimited possibilities opening before him, of which in this cramped physical life we can form no idea. This very upward rushing of spiritual aspiration, which makes so glorious a crown for the developed man, is itself the channel through which the divine power descends, so that the fuller and stronger his aspirations become, the larger is the measure of the grace from on high. In the case of the causal body of an Arhat, that is, of one who has passed the fourth of the great initiations, the colors have two characteristics, which are irreconcilable on the physical plane. They are more delicate and ethereal than any that have been previously described, yet at the same time they are fuller, more brilliant and the more luminous. The size of the causal body is many times larger than that of the physical body, and there is displayed magnificent development of the highest types of intellect, love and devotion, great wealth of sympathy, and highest spirituality. The bands of colors are arranged now in concentric rings, while through these, and extending beyond them, there are streams of white light, radiating outwards from the center. The outrush of divine influence is thus enormously intensified, for the man has become an almost perfect channel for the life and power of the Logos.